You're listening to the Dismantling Normal podcast. I'm Megan Schaefer, and when my perfectly curated normal life blew up and took my standard list of checkboxes with it, I reevaluated everything. I stopped hustling for my worth and found freedom in coloring outside the lines. Join me for authentic, curious conversations that unravel the baggage, bias, and distance our perceptions of normal create. Let's find out what happens when we stop being normal and start being real. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Dismantling Normal. This is the first episode I've released since I took my break, and I could not be more excited to release this episode, my conversation with New York Times bestselling author of On Being Human, Jen Pasteloff. But really quickly about the break, I am notorious for, and I think other people can relate, I am notorious for attempting to do what I've always done anytime there's a big change in my life, whether that change is good or bad. I bend over backwards to try to keep putting one foot in front of the other. I was working ahead so my team wouldn't bear the burden of my tasks. I was creating a leave plan. I was preparing for a new baby, and at one point was then taking care of a new baby, and I couldn't also produce this podcast. Well, that's not true. I could also produce this podcast, but everyone would have lost, and most of all, my son. Those were weeks I was never going to get back. And this time I listened to that voice in my head. You know that voice that says, don't go to the last store, don't run the last errand, don't run the last mile. I usually push that voice aside to my own detriment, but I didn't this time. We don't pause enough. We are depleted and we are tired because we're trying to do it all of the time. And it's not sustainable. I said this before and I'll say it again. What is right will wait for you. The thing you really want to do, it'll wait for you. Pause and come back. Maybe it's 5 minutes. Maybe it's an hour. Maybe it's just putting something down for a while that you don't have time to do. Just creating enough space to breathe, to collect yourself and get some perspective. Okay, so I have recorded this intro like 25 times because I wanted to get it just right. I didn't need it to be perfect, but I wanted what I said to be just right. And I have a hard time out of the gate being super authentic. It's like peeling an onion for me. I don't get it the first time or even the fifth time. I have to really dig to figure out the root of the thing that I feel or think or want to say. And to be honest, most of the time, I think of the best, most perfect thing to say when I'm in the shower. I can't write it down. I can't type it out. I can't record it. I can do nothing. So I get out, life begins again, and it all leaves me. But my guest today, Jen Pasteloff, she is the one who encouraged me and just filled my spirit with what I needed to start this podcast. She is inspiring in her transparency of life. She is passionate about living real and living true, and it is contagious. And her energy just fills you up. I haven't told anyone this, and I didn't tell her in this conversation, but when I reached out to her for coaching, which was a super serendipitous kind of situation, and we talk about that, but when I reached out to her, I wanted to do a podcast. But instead, I was encouraging everyone else around me. I was telling my brother to do one. I was telling friends to do one. Anyone who had any sort of platform in any way, shape, or form, I was passionately talking them into doing a podcast. But I really wanted to do one deep down. And I kept thinking, but who are you? Who do you think you are? What do you have to say? And Jen's attitude of, but why not you? And I ask you the same question, why not you? What is it you want to do that you're talking yourself out of? Are you waiting for someone else to do it? Are you talking someone else into doing it? Why not you? Who am I? Who knows? I'm just making it through the world just like everybody else. And I would love to say I'm doing this for altruistic reasons, but to be honest, I'm doing this to learn about myself. I just figure there's other people out there that are asking some of the same questions. So I'm doing it. I'm nobody special. I'm nobody different. And when I met Jen, life was great on paper. And it was great not on paper. There was nothing wrong. I just didn't feel like it was enough. You know, I had a good job. I had done a lot of work to get into a good mental space after infertility. We were traveling a lot. I had hobbies I enjoyed, but something was off. And ultimately, I wasn't contributing to the world in the way that I wanted. I wasn't being as authentic as I wanted. I wasn't putting effort into my growth like I wanted. And it created a chasm that made me restless and uncomfortable and honestly feel like a fraud. So enter Jen. I just read her book, which I've read twice now. And full disclosure, I've never read the last page because I never want it to be over. Honestly, when you read this book, it feels like you're just sitting in a room having a conversation with Jen. She is, like I said, the epitome of living real and listening hard and no bullshit motherhood and real motherfucking life. We talk about faring the pandemic, the stories we tell ourselves, how we get in our own way, and ultimately what it means to be human. And as we ramble through this fucking strange, hard, absurd, beautiful year, let's keep that in mind. Our humanity. That's what will always connect us, our humanity. I will be forever grateful and forever changed and in awe by my chance meeting with Jen Pasteloff in this lifetime. You've got to follow her. She is on Instagram. Her handle's at Jen Pasteloff. Oh, also super exciting. Jen and Alicia Easter are starting their own podcast. Well, by now they've started it. It's out there. So it's called What Are You Bringing? And you can find it wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can follow them on Instagram. And the handle's at WayB Podcast. So it's at WayB Podcast. Okay. Let's get to it. Okay. How are you?
I'm good. I am so, so sorry that this took so long.
Don't for one minute feel bad that this took so long. It all works out. You have so much going on. Like, I'm dying to hear all of the things between your podcast. You're writing another book? I mean...
Yeah, well... I mean, yes, I'm writing another book. I'm not very far into that process. And then the podcast, yeah, actually, we're recording an episode today. We're going to launch next month.
So, gosh, I'm trying to even think where to begin.
Well, let's begin with you, with the birth of this. Didn't I help you come up with this idea to actually, you know, why don't you do a podcast, Megan? You. And you me? Oh, no. And here we are. Here we are.
And I just posted something today that, you know, talking about doing the thing you can't not do. And there was just something about our conversation and something about the permission of, yeah, like you don't have to wait. You can just decide I'm going to do this. Like, that's what I think that our conversation and you gave me was just, I don't know why you're not doing this. Just decide and do it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I think that is so much of your thing. I mean, I don't know if I've told you this directly before, but it's not an exaggeration to say that your first book changed my life. I have never read a book before. And I have told everyone this. I've never read a book before where I felt like the author was sitting in the room with me.
God, that's the greatest compliment. I mean, I'm just trying to receive it.
Yeah. And then I didn't know what it would be like when I talked to you in person. And it's the same. So I'm telling everyone who's listening on Being Human, when you read the book and you take in all the words, like, that is Jen talking to you.
I love it. Well, you know, this is really good to hear because I stopped coaching after you did that. Mm-hmm. Just kidding. I couldn't keep up. I was so busy with traveling and book tour and momming, and I couldn't keep up. And I thought, mm-hmm. I I cannot do this. I don't have the bandwidth, you know, to fully be present and do this. And I'm gonna start again. And I only have room for two people. Yeah. And I'm really excited because I feel like you're my dream. I don't want to call it client, but yeah, let's call it that. You're my dream person, really. So if you're listening and you're just like, Megan, please reach out. Maybe you too will birth a podcast when we're done.
Well, and I had never hired a coach. I didn't know what to expect. You know, I just was going into it blind. I remember, this is funny. I remember emailing, I had just finished your book. I had just started following you on Instagram and you announced you were going to start coaching. And there was an email, a specific email to write in, and I did. And I think at the bottom, I put something like, I'm sure this is a bot or an automated email, but just in case it's really you.
I know everyone thinks that. Everyone thinks that. It's so funny the way I'm fascinated by the I don't know what the word I'm looking for, but the difference between perception and what's really occurring. What's the word I'm looking for? Not the discrepancy, but like the
disconnect.
Yeah, but I think it's funny and it's interesting and it's fascinating and we all do it. But the way that we perceive people, and so much of it is because of social media or stories we make up. For example, you read a book by someone, you know, a best-selling book, and you make up a story that this person must be so famous or so together or so this or so that. We make up a story and we don't even know we're doing it.
Absolutely.
And meanwhile, I haven't even brushed my teeth today. You know,
Yeah, you wrote back right away. You're like, it's me. And I was like, oh, crap. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's me.
But that was a great experience. You have a unique style about it. And I think it was really what I needed in that at that time. I couldn't have asked for anything more. So that's my plug.
So happy
for you
to hear that. Yeah. And I would kind of hope everyone has a unique style about it. And also, who are you comparing it to? You've never done it.
Well, that's a good point. Maybe but, you have a unique style compared to what I was. Yeah. I must have had some sort of expectation.
Well, no. I mean, I have a unique style about everything, I think. You know, I don't follow any rules. So, yay.
Yeah. Well, I don't know that we can get through anything called dismantling normal without talking about how the pandemic has been for you.
How, say it again, how what?
That how the pandemic has been for you.
Oh. Listeners, I'm hard of hearing, so sometimes I will ask Megan to repeat herself. Okay, it's been shit. It's been shit. It's been It's been really hard. You know, the reason I pushed you this morning is because I took a class. A friend of mine, Nicole Shaka, amazing teacher, I took a 45 minute, it was something about being still and moving. And it's the first time I've done any sort of yoga or really moved my body since February. And I told her I was going to go and I'm really working on keeping my word. And I knew I needed it because I've been depressed. But the pandemic, I suppose March is around when it like got real, and it's September now, and I feel like I can't account for the time passing. You know, I'm like, wait, I swear it was just March. I was just in Portland flying home because we decided to cancel the workshop, and now it's September, and you know, I lost all my income, which was really depressing on many levels. One was because, you know, I didn't have any money. You know, I had a tiny bit in the bank, but no income coming in. And then the other one was because I really love what I do. I love, love, love what I do. And I stopped doing that thing.
Yeah.
And so I felt empty and depressed and afraid, and it was bad. And so, you know, definitely some beautiful things have come from it. Like I used my platform on Instagram and social media to raise a shit ton of money to feed people who were dealing with food insecurity, and all these people came together, volunteers, and that was beautiful. And I developed some really great friendships, which was not something that I would have thought, you know, not that I had any thoughts really, because I'd never gone through a pandemic, but I wasn't expecting it. But in terms of my mental health, it's been hard and bad. And so just on Monday, in fact, I went up on my antidepressants because I wasn't doing well. And I think a lot of it is I know what it is. I'm very open about the fact that exercise and moving my body really helps in conjunction with my antidepressants. And I virtually stopped. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the not working. I've done some online stuff, but just all of it. So that's why, in the name of self-care, I postponed you this morning by 30 minutes so I could do that. And I was so proud of myself.
I'm so glad you did.
Yeah, I really was like, wow. And I got emotional because I thought, this was so simple. Mm-hmm. This was so simple. I really just had to roll out my mat and I just had to say yes and I just had to show up. And whether I did anything or I just sat there, it didn't matter to me. And I really mean that. It didn't. It was that I made the commitment and I'm going to do it again next week. I'm going to start mm-hmm. one a week. But the pandemic has been really hard. It's been hard because as someone who struggles with a chemical depression, it really pushed me over the edge and I have been struggling. So if you're listening and you're also someone who deals with depression or anxiety, I see you, I feel you, I got you, I'm here. And just reinvention. Reinvention is, I wrote about this in On Being Human, but change is terrifying to me, as it is for a lot of people. Some people really love it and welcome it, and I abhor it and do anything to not change, even if I'm miserable, which is not healthy. But change is very difficult and painful. And so I've been resisting the reinvention and all the online stuff, you know. So in a nutshell, it's been hard and it's also been beautiful. I'll just say that because I can't ignore the beauty that's also come from it. But, you know, I'm ready for it to be over. And then probably the biggest thing or one of the biggest things is, so I'm deaf without my hearing aids and I read lips, and masks have made my life hell. I cannot express with words, even though I'm a writer, I cannot express with words the horror being a deaf person and a lip reader in a masked world, what it's like. So that's I'm ready for masks to be gone.
I feel like for you too, I mean, all lip readers, anyone having any difficulty with hearing and trying to deal with masks, absolutely. I can't imagine how difficult that would be. I will also add to that, for you in particular, in the way that you fully listen to people when you are in person with them, I feel like the mask is even more, like, you take into so many facial expressions and the body language and all the...
I have to. I have to.
Yeah. And it's your thing, right? To be able to hear somebody when they're not talking. And
Well, hear someone when they're not talking and when they are. Because, you know, so the irony is when... Like, for example, now I can hear you pretty well, better than in person. Mm-hmm. When things stream through my hearing aids, or right now I have headphones on. But in person, I have to work so hard to hear. Mm. I mean, even whether you're speaking or you're not, when you're talking, I have to get in close. And none of that is possible right now.
Right.
You know, so I've recently shared these pictures on my Instagram of workshops. There's so many people have snapped photos of me and you can just see how hard I'm working to listen and how much I'm there with you, and that I'm struggling with that right now. Mm-hmm. But also struggling just to fucking be able to understand what's going on. So if I'm not with a translator or an interpreter, i.e. a typical hearing person like you mm-hmm. or my husband or something, I'm fucked. And then I'll say, I read lips. I don't know what you're saying. And it doesn't register. They just keep talking. I mean, and then not everyone's comfortable pulling their mask down. So it's a really weird, heavy, hard time. And I'm so ready, like everyone, I think, for it to be over. And yet I'm not saying don't wear a mask. You know, we need them. Obviously, it's science. But it's definitely contributed to the mental health space that I've been in.
Yeah, I could see that. you know, you mentioned raising money for families. This is something I also find remarkable about you, and just like observing your social media feed and that sort of thing, is your ability to kind of just go with it. And as you know from coaching me, I have a really hard time just going with it. I have all my lists, you know. But your ability to kind of put something out there, and as it develops and you realize, oh, this can be a thing, your ability to kind of let it organically become the thing.
I love that you said that. Thanks. Yeah, that's my, you know, I think of it in a way as a blessing and a curse, because I'm, God bless my mom, I learned it from her, but I'm very impulsive. Mm-hmm. And so I tend to not overthink something. And that can get me in trouble sometimes. But yeah, yes, yes. I mean, ultimately, it's a gift. And I'm really, you know, it's the way I live my life. And that raising money just felt, for anyone listening who doesn't know what we're talking about, it started with...
It was one question, right?
Yeah, yeah. I've been attempting to be of service for a long time, since really Wayne Dyer taught me that question, how may I serve? And so I've built up this community, but I posted back in, I don't remember if it was March or April, March maybe. I don't know. Time doesn't exist. I said, do you have enough food to eat, on this Instagram meme I made? And the reason was, I wasn't thinking that I myself could, you know, feed everyone who said no or send them money. But I knew that this community I had built up would take care of each other. And that's exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But then it became a little unmanageable. Like, people were, you know, Venmoing me to send to Susie in Florida. And so one of my followers, her name is Dana Mondello, we had never met, but she said, you know, do you want me to set you up a GoFundMe? This one might make it easier to streamline. And then it was like game on. And then I did a workshop, a virtual workshop, and like $10,000 got raised on Instagram for an hour.
Yeah.
You know, and we learned a lot. I learned a lot. We overcomplicated it. If we'd known how hard it was going to be, we probably wouldn't have done it. You know, in the beginning, we were going to give people $100 grocery cards, and that ended up being impossible, actually. So it ended
up becoming... Which was so shocking. That was so surprising.
For so many reasons. So many reasons that, mm-hmm. I mean, we can get into them. Maybe we will. But we ended up just doing cash grants, you know, just $100. And in fact, I'm going to start doing it again with my friend who has a nonprofit. We're going to start raising money again. The grocery cart thing. Okay. So many people, so many grocery stores don't do them. People don't check their mail, or it goes to spam, and then mailing them, like, oh, it became such a big, big, big thing. So many of them don't do virtual ones, or we would send people things and they wouldn't get it, or getting their mailing address, getting them to write us back, you know? Then a lot of the places there was like, I guess scammers do this. They buy bulk gift cards. And at the end of the day, it's much easier just to PayPal or Venmo someone $100 and go do what you need to do. And it was $100. So, you know, we had this whole system and figuring out, you know, how to allot the money. And for me, it's like, it's $100. So people were like, what if you get scammed? Well, then you do. I mean, it's $100, which is a lot of money, but it's also not $10,000. And if we were giving out bigger grants, I'd say there'd be, a deeper vetting system. But we were just trying to, like, feed some people, you know, help someone get a chicken, give someone the feeling that someone's out there caring about them.
Yeah. I mean, $100, that's a minute to breathe, right? That's like...
For sure. I mean, and if you're smart when you go to the grocery store and you know how to shop and you know, oh my gosh, you can get a lot of stuff. Like, if you're not going to Whole Foods and buying, you know, $15 loaf of gluten-free bread and organic, you know, $17 1 ounce bottle of olive oil. But if you're really smart, yeah, you can make $100 really last. And there were people, it was heartbreaking, and it still is. It's not gone anywhere. There are so many people dealing with food insecurity, and I use my platform. To me, it's a no-brainer. I use my platform in that way is to people listen to me, which is hilarious, but they do. And so I'll say, you know, Georgina in Louisiana They need toilet paper and water, and her children need laptops. Here's the Amazon link. You can get it, or you can Venmo me and I'll get it. And they'll help, and it's beautiful. And Simone, wasn't she on your show?
Yeah, it just came out this week. Yeah.
The Black Fairy Godmother. Yeah. So yeah. I'm on her team, and she really, you know, she does that, and it does it so beautifully. And so most of the time I take her asks, you know, and I amplify them.
Yeah. I love that system because it is so easy. Honestly, it doesn't take this whole kind of process or overthinking. It's just like, oh, okay, am I in a position to do this today? And if I am, you know, there's a link and you go and you take care of it and you move on.
It is, but it's I have thoughts, you know. I'm always on Simone. She's like, she calls me like her Jewish auntie, you know, but I am always on her because it completely consumes her and takes up all our time. And she has, you know, a son who has autism and is nonverbal. And so there's, you know, I want to find a way for her to keep doing this, but also have an income. Yes, it's beautiful, but it's also, I don't know that it's how sustainable it is. Do you know?
Yeah. Well, and go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I have to be careful. And I try to be careful with my followers and my platform too, because you can't ask every single day, or people get donor fatigue. They delete you. They block you. They just can't. So there's a fine line.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one of the questions I asked Simone in the podcast was, how does she take care of herself? And she was just flat out, I don't.
Yes. Simone, are you listening? I hope you're listening to this. And like right now, actually, her birthday is coming up, and there's a PayPal pool to try to raise $5,000. I think it's almost there to have her and some friends go to an Airbnb. And
oh, nice.
But I'm... And she's always like, Aunt Jen, I know. But it's a real thing. When you develop, and I have this reputation to you, when you develop a reputation for good reason as someone who helps people, I get, and she gets, so many emails a day. And it's impossible to turn away. But you have to sometimes, because no matter how many people you help, you blink and there's 10 more.
I know. Well, that's what I was thinking about it from that side of things. Like, it's the turning away has to be painful. You know, I mean, it's great to help.
So
it feels
hard.
Good to help. But the pain of turning away is got to be hard.
So hard. And also, it's, it's so hard, so painful. And yet, it's anyone listening, me, Simone, anyone who's human, you can't save everyone. You just can't. You can't please everyone. You can't make everyone happy. You can't say yes to everyone. And it's a tough pill. It's a bitter pill to swallow. And it's just the truth.
Yeah. So I'm gonna jump back to your book for a second, because I don't know if I ever told you how I ended up reading it. And you'll laugh, because one of your things was getting me to stop making so many lists. And I had this huge book list, and I...
Oh, yeah, your queen list.
Yeah. And I had this huge list, and it was so overwhelming. It was stressing me out, and this was just supposed to be a fun way to keep track of books. So I deleted every single one of them. And
wow.
I decided, and this was a year and a half ago or whatever, and I decided, I cannot keep track of this. When books cross my path, if there is a compelling reason to read them, I will. Like, I will just pick it up and read it right then. And not long after that, I started seeing your book all over my social media feed. In the title, On Being Human, I thought, oh my gosh, that is going to be such an archaeological dig. I just don't know. And so, because the title alone, I was like, this is going to be so good and so like...
It is a good title.
Yeah, it is. And so, it kept coming up, and I kept not listening to my own self. And finally, I was sitting in an airport and I was leaving for vacation. And I said, oh, I need a book. And I opened up Amazon, and no kidding, it said, you might also like, and your book.
Oh my God, I love
it. And I said out loud in the airport, oh, for the love of God, fine. What's hilarious is it took all of that, the universe, like bringing it to me over and over and over again. And then I said already, it changed my life. But the title, the reason I bring all that up is the title is so great. And I wondered if you could answer the question about, and I know there's tons of answers, but what to you does it mean to be human?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you the origin story of the title, and that might answer it. So my workshop, oh, my leg just fell asleep. How human of me. My workshop used to be called the Manifestation Workshop. And then over time, there's a colon, and then it, on being human, I added. And over time, I dropped the manifestation because I realized what I was more interested in, what really compelled me more was what made us human, the things that connected us, our stories, our fallibilities, our sorrows, our joys, our collective grief, our the things that, you know, we feel we're the only one, but we're not. Mm-hmm. So eventually the manifestation part dropped and just began to be called On Being Human. What does it mean to be human? It means being imperfectly yourself and connected to your empathy and your compassion, really.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that.
I mean, that's the biggest part. I think that's why the workshop began. You know, people started sharing their stories and other people would listen and you could see, oh, wow, so many people have never been listened to. And the people listening with their wide eyes and their, I know, me too. And you go, oh, that's connection. That's empathy. That's mm-hmm. compassion. And that's what it means to be human.
I do think that's amazing when we start sharing our stories that, you know, how people tend to come out of the woodwork and say, oh, yeah, I the same thing happened to me or to my cousin or my brother or my whatever.
Right.
And
I mean, Me Too was a big part of my workshop before the Me Too movement. You know, mm-hmm. people would say something, you know, I'm whatever it is, you know, we'd be talking about what we're afraid of. And someone would, you know, get really honest about, you know, I'm afraid of aging. And then, you know, Me Too. And so way before the Me Too movement, but it's that feeling of Me Too. Mm-hmm. That's so important because so often we feel like we're the only one or we make stories up about other people or the world or how we fit into the world.
Right. Or how we're supposed to fit into the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's something you use a lot, is the bullshit stories. The bullshit stories that we make up.
Yeah, they're debilitating, or they can be, you know. Sometimes I think if you're aware of your own bullshit stories, you're able to use tools. You know, for example, I posted about this, but the other day I was kind of getting down on myself. I went on a walk and I had this momentary kind of panic of, oh my God, I've been, because I travel for a living and mm-hmm. I haven't been since March. I've just been home. And I said, oh my God, I've been home since March. And what do I have to show for it? And I panicked. I thought, oh my God, what a sloth I am. I mean, what? How can this be? And I so quickly got out of it. I didn't get stuck. I didn't spiral. I didn't go down a bullshit story. And I was able to say, you know what I have to show for it? Me. Mm-hmm. I'm right here. I'm breathing. And I was able to use the tools that I have that I talk about in my book and that I, you know, teach, which, and that was a really great moment. And so the bullshit story didn't suck me in and make me feel like it was truth.
Yeah.
Bullshit story there being that your productivity is equal to your worth or, right. you know, your weight or your body shape is equal to your worth. You know, those kind of things. That's a bullshit story.
That's a hard one for me to shake too. Just anything like insert here attached to my worth. Like there's so I have a whole long list of things that I have always told myself or been told or some combination of the two that, you know, that is attached to my worth. And basically the idea that you have to earn your worth, you know, that has been hard for me to let go.
So many, I mean, gosh, so many, and a lot of bullshit stories are so insidious and we don't even realize that we are carrying them because either mm-hmm. we've been carrying them for so long in our bodies or we're not aware of them. You know, like I'm unlovable. That's one that's really, mm-hmm. really common. Or I have a lot of bullshit stories around money. You know, people who grew up without money, it's hard to break that poverty mentality. And so they walk around with a lot of bullshit stories around money. I will never I will never have money. I will always be broke.
Yeah.
Even when it's not true, even as you're like looking in your bank account and there's, you know, $400,000 in there, right?
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned too, when you know them. And I think that is such a process. I think that is like peeling an onion, you know, like uncovering, like you get the tip of the iceberg of the bullshit story and then you realize it, but you haven't gotten to the roots yet. You haven't like really dug to the deep, deep, deep part of it. That's hard. And it comes up. I think it has to be a constant process of kind of like, I used the term archaeological dig earlier, but you have to kind of keep chipping because they go run deep.
Yeah. That's where, to me, the now what comes in. So I was always one of these people, you know, as a child, I remember going to therapists, which I never stayed with. And even as a teen, when I was, you know, dying from anorexia, and they're like, you're so self-aware. I knew I was anorexic. I wasn't in denial about it. I knew the things I was doing. So then it becomes like, okay, so you can know something. And then what? Now what? Now what? That's why the now what is so important to me. So, okay, I'm aware of it. But if I'm not doing anything to shift, then what's going to change? Just being aware isn't enough. It's big. Don't get me wrong. It is. Mm-hmm. It's big to acknowledge it. But what are you doing on a daily basis to not let it be the boss of you?
Yeah. And that's where I guess, you know, the work is so referenced, but I guess that is where the work lies. Like you said, with anorexia, well, just because you knew it was happening didn't change anything for you. You have to do the thing, even to your class that you took today, that small promise you make to yourself to say, I'm going to do this. And then you keep it. And that feels like gold sometimes.
That's,
and it
a
could be
huge now what.
Really,
that's a huge now what. So recently I said to someone, I don't remember who, you know, I said this thing I was going through, I called it a funk. It's hard. It's hard to be honest about depression. And I said, but I'm trying to get out of it. And the person texted me back really earnestly and they go, oh, what are you doing to get out? What are you doing? And I was like, oh my God, they just called me out. I'm totally lying. I'm not doing anything to try to get out of it. What a lie. I literally just said that. I mean, but I didn't mean it. I mean, I wrote that, but when I was confronted with, well, what's your now what then? What are you doing to get out of the funk? I was like, oh, wait a minute. Actually nothing. So this morning was a really beautiful now what? And I did it. Now what? 45 minutes. You know, here's another example. I tend to be disorganized, et cetera, and I showed up. I'm here today with you. That's a big thing for me. I had it in my calendar. I'm working on all these things, and I know it sounds, you know, you might roll your eyes, but we all have our things, you know, and this is where I get overwhelmed with scheduling and showing up and organizing. You know, I'll say yes to something, and then, you know, let's say I said yes to this and Megan's texts me at 10:30. Where are you? Are we still on? And I'm like, frick, I forgot. It's classic me. So now what? I showed up. I was ready. I emailed you before. I said, what do I need? And I'm here.
Yeah.
As opposed to me just doing, I'm trying to get better at being organized. Oh, well, what are you doing to try?
And I think sometimes, like, if you replace trying with I want to, I think that's a valid replacement in the context that you're talking about it. Like,
bingo,
I'm trying
bingo.
To get out of depression. I want to get out of depression. I'm trying to get organized. I want to get organized. And I think for you in particular, and I'll use this podcast as an example also, like, you were so excited for me to do it. Like, you wanted to be on so badly. And I even remember when we were trying to schedule, I thought, I don't know how she's going to do this. I mean, it's just not possible. Her to be
no, it is, but I mean, that it's because I get in my own way. I mean, so many, it really is. I mean, so now we're being really honest, because I get in my own way, because I don't write things down. I mean, yes, I have a 4-year-old and my, you know, I don't have a traditional kind of 9-to-5 job, but I get in my own way. And I'm really working on, because I said I would, because I said I would. I'm just really happy to be here. I'm so proud of you. I remember this. I remember you like teasing the idea. And I remember you saying that for your job, your real job, not real, mm-hmm. but your paying job.
But one that pays me.
Yeah, produce podcasts. And I said, why don't you do one? I mean, it was one of those, it's like, I'm really proud of this moment because here you are at this really beautiful, vulnerable, successful podcast. And that's amazing.
And you helped me because I came to you with an idea. And this is where I get in my own way. I came to you with an idea and it was very niche and it was very small, but it was something that I was
fostering.
Yes, it was about foster care and adoption. And I was interested in it. So I thought my interest would propel me to do some research and find some guests and do whatever. And this is where I get in my own way and where you really helped me. You said, you listen to me, give my pitch. And you're like, that's too small. That audience is too small. And Ian, you said, there's just not enough people that are interested in that topic. Not that it is not a good topic, but it's just you're going to run out.
Not only that, it's just that I was listening to you. I was listening to you talk about the infertility stuff. And I mean, I was really listening to you. And I was like, you're not being honest also mm-hmm. with what you want to put out in the world and what you're and who you are. For me, I thought that's a great idea, even for a couple episodes, but you're so much bigger.
Yeah. And then we brainstormed through it. And I was like, and title wise, I was like, I knew I had one, but I just could not. We kept talking about normal. And you have talked about this on your platform and in your book about, you know, what is normal. But yeah, you helped me really blow it up into more of a vision. And again, I go back to that's where I get in my own way. I try to keep things very small just so I can stick my toe in and not so that I really flood it out into the world and say, this is me who I am. Here I am. You know, and that's where I try to keep everything so small just so it's just comfortable, just uncomfortable enough that I'm doing something.
That's human. Yeah. You know, I do the same thing, really. And one of the things I talk about in my workshop and in the book is like finding your people and whether your people is someone you hired, you know, like I was your coach or your friends, but people who remind you who you really are and remind mm-hmm. you that you don't have to keep it so small. And to be clear, it was not a bad idea, the podcast idea, but it wasn't this. It wasn't right. Dismantling normal.
Right.
Where anything, it's like on being human, anything can fall under the umbrella of dismantling normal. You have so much more possibility. You have so much more to explore and play with.
Absolutely. And what it really has ended up translating into is it's allowed me to explore myself more.
Yes.
And what I think about different things. Because I've said this before, but as much as I hope everybody gets something out of this, and I just told one of my guests, because she was asking about comments and things, and I said, nobody is going to get as much out of this as you and I just did.
So true. That's all it's about is connection, yeah. Right? It's just having mm-hmm. that. That's our podcast. You know, Alicia and I, Alicia Easter, started one called What Are You Bringing? Meaning like, what are you bringing to life? What are you bringing to the table? What are you bringing to the barbecue? And it's just, we're just looking to have a beautiful conversation with your new best friend. Mm-hmm. But it's like, it's about connection, conversation. It's not about likes, at least not for me. It's not about popularity. I mean, yeah, it would be great if it gets so popular that you get advertisers and you can quit your job. But like, it's about connecting with another human being.
Right. Which, going back to your title, I really love it because I love that it is a question and it immediately makes you start thinking, you know, like, what am I bringing?
Yeah, what are you bringing? Alicia came up with it. Like, what are you bringing to the barbecue? And
right.
And it it's really beautiful. I mean, it's going to be interesting. Collaborating isn't easy. It's beautiful mm-hmm. and challenging and, you know, and we both have big personalities, but I'm so excited and nervous and, yeah, you know, we got to
be nervous about
keeping up. Isn't that funny? I'm it's really a thing I'm looking at right now. This overwhelm. I tend to get overwhelmed, you know, mm-hmm. like the coaching. I'm only going to take two people because I'm like, how am I going to, I'm going to write my new book and this and I have the podcast and keeping up. And I've yet in my life, and I'm in my 40s, been able to figure out a system and keep up with it. So I'm just worried I'm going to pull my same bullshit. And then that keeps me in a space of overwhelm. And I'm so tired of being overwhelmed. I'm just done with it. Because it doesn't have to be that way. There are really simple systems. There are like, just write it down, Jennifer. Ask someone for help, Jennifer. You know, put sticky notes around. There's ways that I don't have to be overwhelmed, but I tend to keep landing there. So I worry.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that you asked that. I'm like, what is it that I'm worried about?
Well, I mean, I think it's natural that you would be nervous. I think it's a natural thing to be nervous about. I was just curious what I get nervous about telling people's stories. A lot of people that I've talked to, it's the first time they're ever telling their story. I always just want it to be a good experience for them.
Isn't it so interesting how we're all just so different? Like, so that's your thing. And what I'm, and you'll, you know, you probably are like, what? When I say what I'm worried about. Because like, for me, what you're talking about comes really easy to me. And for you, you know, you're a list person. I literally never make lists. So it's just, wow, humans are so fascinating and different.
I did stop, by the way, just anecdotally, I do not make as many lists today as I did. I did have to go back to some of them because I couldn't breathe, but
I'm proud of you. By the way, what's a book list? You mentioned earlier book list. What does that mean?
Oh, you know, just in my program that keeps track of my thousands of lists, I just had a list. Like every time I would come across a book that I liked, I would add it.
Oh, like to be read.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. Got it. Well, I say we meet in the middle halfway. We meet in the middle. Like I take a little of your like, list making, organized, I don't want to call it neuroses, but maybe a little. And you take some of my impulsive, you know, impulsivity.
Yeah. I really admire your impulsivity. And I said this already, but I'll say it again. And the way it grows into things. I mean, it's not like you're impulsive for the sake of impulsive, you know, like it, your stuff grows into. Like, in fact, you know what? My favorite part of your book was when you were doing your first yoga retreat. So this goes right in line with your impulsivity. You were doing your first yoga retreat. You did.
And I was like, what the fuck am I doing? Oh my
God. Yes. That's exactly the part. You copied your agenda from something else, and it had meditating at the top of the list. And all of a sudden, you had all these women in the room, and you realized you didn't know how to meditate, and you turned around away from everyone so they couldn't see your face, and you mouthed, fuck me. Yes.
Yeah, fuck me. Like, fuck.
Yes. But see, I love that because that really hit me because I was like, okay, you can still pull something off and not have any clue what the fuck you're doing. Like, it can still work.
I'm proof of that, my friend. I don't know what I'm doing ever.
Well,
I'm doing really well.
I don't know what you're doing. But in that moment, you did not know what you were doing. And you pulled it off. And something awesome and beautiful came out of it.
Yeah. And you know, the subheading or the heading of that chapter, if I recall, is something like it was in you all along. And so I really do believe that. I believe so many times, you know, people wait. I don't wait to get things right. And sometimes that gets me in trouble. I'm just like, here it is. And that's what I did with that experience. And it morphed into, I think that was 2009 or something. And it morphed into this beautiful life I have. That's a vacuum. Can you hear that?
No. Not at all.
Okay. So this is the joy, as my friends listening, of living in a one-bedroom apartment. I'm in the living room / office / playroom / laundry room. Hashtag real motherfucking life.
That's another hashtag of yours I love.
Real motherfucking life.
Absolutely.
Robert's like, my husband's like, what's with the potty mouth? I thought, we've been married 10 years. Are you just discovering this?
Was that a recent question?
Yeah, he said it last night because I was showing him a video. I'm on this new amazing app called Mind. On Thursdays, I do a happy hour, even though I'm not drinking right now. So that's hilarious. Mm-hmm. But I do a happy hour where I just riff on anything. And I was cursing a lot. I was talking about real motherfucking life. And he was watching it. And he was like, what's up with the potty mouth? And I just laughed like, hello. So, yeah, it's important to me. It's important to me to be real. I don't know another way to be. So that doesn't mean that I overshare. I mean, maybe sometimes I do, but that doesn't mean that I owe everyone everything about my life. But I don't I don't feel like I have to be ashamed or hide.
Right. Well, as we're kind of closing things out, I have one more question for you, just in the spirit of the whole dismantling normal thing. If you could pick one thing that you think society in general, people in general think is normal, but isn't, like if you could dispel one thing that was like, I want everyone to know that this thing is not normal, or you can go the opposite direction too. You could say this isn't normal and no one thinks it's normal, but it is.
Oh, that's good. Okay. I'll answer both. I think feeling afraid, you know, I think most people are terrified and that's normal and people think it's not. You know, I'm afraid.
Every day.
For the normal thing, I think having kids. I'm talking to you. You know, my best friend doesn't have kids. I think we're getting better as a society with that, maybe, but there's still an expectation of like, oh, you're married and you're of a certain age and you're a woman. Why don't you have kids? That's not normal. And I call big bullshit on that.
Oh my gosh, I love talking to you. This has been so fun. I appreciate you taking out the time and showing up and being here today. I've loved this.
I'm so proud of you. And I love this idea. The only shitty thing about it is that I didn't think of it first to call my next book that. I'm so proud of you. This is such a beautiful thing you're exploring, and it's so needed and it's so important, and I am your number one fan, so I got you.
I appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening. Let's keep this conversation rolling. For questions and comments, find us on Facebook, Instagram at Dismantling Normal. Visit our website, dismantlingnormal.com, for the show notes and extra links. See you next time. Have a great day, guys.